Chapter 27. After a long silence, during which Almayer had moved towards the table and sat down, his head between his hands, staring straight before him, lingered, who had recommenced walking, cleared his throat and said, "What was it you were saying?"
"Ah, yes. You should have seen this settlement that night. I don't think anybody went to bed. I walked down to the point, and could see them. They had a big bonfire in the palm grove, and the talk went on there till the morning. When I came back here and sat in the dark veranda in this quiet house, I felt so frightfully lonely that I stole in and took the child out of her cot and brought her here into my hammock. If it hadn't been for her, I am sure I would have gone mad. I felt so utterly alone and helpless. Remember, I hadn't heard from you for 4 months. Didn't know whether you were alive or dead. Padalolo would have nothing to do with me. My own men were deserting me like rats to a sinking hulk. That was a black night for me, Captain Lingard. A black night as I sat here not knowing what would happen next. They were so excited and rowdy that I really feared they would come and burn the house over my head. I went and brought my revolver. Laid it loaded on the table. There were such awful yells now and then. Luckily the child slept through it, and seeing her so pretty and peaceful steadied me somehow. Couldn't believe there was any violence in this world, looking at her lying so quiet and so unconscious of what went on. But it was very hard. Everything was at an end. You must understand that on that night there was no government in Sambor. Nothing to restrain those fellows. Padalolo had collapsed. I was abandoned by my own people, and all that lot could vent their spite on me if they wanted. They know no gratitude. How many times haven't I saved this settlement from starvation? Absolute starvation. Only 3 months ago I distributed again a lot of rice on credit. There was nothing to eat in this infernal place. They came begging on their knees. There isn't a man in Sambor, big or little, who is not in debt to Lingard and Company. Not one. You ought to be satisfied. You always said that was the right policy for us. Well, I carried it out. Ah, Captain Lingard, a policy like that should be backed by loaded rifles. Dot, you had them, exclaimed Lingard in the midst of his promenade, that went on more rapid as Almayer talked. The headlong tramp of a man hurrying on to do something violent. The veranda was full of dust, oppressive and choking, which rose under the old seaman's feet, and made Almayer cough again and again. Yes, I had 20. And not a finger to pull a trigger. It's easy to talk, he spluttered, his face very red. Lingard dropped into a chair, and leaned back with one hand stretched out at length upon the table, the other thrown over the back of his seat. The dust settled, and the sun surging above the forest, flooded the veranda with a clear light. Almayer got up, and busied himself in lowering the split rattan screens that hung between the columns of the veranda. "Phew," said Lingard, "it will be a hot day." "That's right, my boy. Keep the sun out. We don't want to be roasted alive here." Almayer came back, sat down, and spoke very calmly. "In the morning I went across to see Padalolo. I took the child with me, of course. I found the water gate barred, and had to walk round through the bushes. Padalolo received me lying on the floor, in the dark, all the shutters closed. I could get nothing out of him, but lamentations and groans. He said you must be dead. That Lakamba was coming now with Abdullah's guns to kill everybody. Said he did not mind being killed, as he was an old man, but that the wish of his heart was to make a pilgrimage. He was tired of men's ingratitude. He had no heirs. He wanted to go to Mecca and die there. He would ask Abdullah to let him go. Then he abused Lakamba between sobs and you, a little. You prevented him from asking for a flag, that would have been respected. He was right there and now, when his enemies were strong he was weak, and you were not there to help him. When I tried to put some heart into him, telling him he had 4 big guns, you know, the brass 6-pounders you left here last year, and that I would get powder, and that, perhaps, together we could make head against Lakamba, he simply howled at me. No matter which way he turned, he shrieked the white men would be the death of him, while he wanted only to be a pilgrim, and be at peace. My belief is, added Elmayer, after a short pause, and fixing a dull stare upon Lingard, that the old fool saw this thing coming for a long time, and was not only too frightened to do anything himself, but actually too scared to let you or me know of his suspicions. Another of your particular pets. Well, you have a lucky hand, I must say. Lingard struck a sudden blow on the table with his clenched hand. There was a sharp crack of splitting wood. Elmayer started up violently, then fell back in his chair and looked at the table. There, he said, moodily, you don't know your own strength. This table is completely ruined. The only table I had been able to save from my wife. By and by I will have to eat squatting on the floor like a native. Lingard laughed heartily. Well then, don't nag at me like a woman at a drunken husband. He became very serious after a while, and added, if it hadn't been for the loss of the flesh I would have been here 3 months ago, and all would have been well. No use crying over that. Don't you be uneasy, Casper. We will have everything shipshape here in a very short time. What? You don't mean to expel Abdullah out of here by force? I tell you, you can't. Not I, exclaimed Lingard. Hats all over, I am afraid. Great pity. They will suffer for it. He will squeeze them. Great pity. Damn it. I feel so sorry for them. If I had the flesh here I would try force. Eh? Why not? However, the poor flesh is gone, and there is an end of it. Poor old hooker. Hey, Elmayer? You made a voyage or two with me. Wasn't she a sweet craft? Could make her do anything but talk. She was better than a wife to me. Never scolded. Hey, and to think that it should come to this. That I should leave her poor old bones sticking on a reef, as though I had been a damned fool of a southern-going man who must have half a mile of water under his keel to be safe. Well, well, it's only those who do nothing that make no mistakes, I suppose. But it's hard. Hard. He nodded sadly, with his eyes on the ground. Elmayer looked at him with growing indignation. Upon my word, you are heartless, he burst out, perfectly heartless and selfish. It does not seem to strike you in all that in losing your ship by your recklessness, I am sure you ruin me us, and my little Nina. What's going to become of me and of her? That's what I want to know. You brought me here, made me your partner, and now, when everything is gone to the devil through your fault, mind you talk about your ship. Ship. You can get another. But here. This trade. That's gone now, thanks to Willems. Your dear Willems. Never you mind about Willems. I will look after him, said Lingard, severely. And as to the trade. I will make your fortune yet, my boy. Never fear. Have you got any cargo for the schooner that brought me here? The shed is full of rattans, answered Elmayer, and I have about 80 tons of gutta in the well. The last lot I ever will have, no doubt, he added, bitterly. So, after all, there was no robbery. You've lost nothing actually. Well then, you must. Hello. What's the matter? Here. Robbery. No! Screamed Elmayer, throwing up his hands. He fell back in the chair and his face became purple. A little white foam appeared on his lips and trickled down his chin, while he lay back, showing the whites of his upturned eyes. When he came to himself he saw Lingard standing over him, with an empty water chatty in his hand. You had a fit of some kind, said the old seaman with much concern. Had it? You did give me a fright. So very sudden. Elmayer, his hair all wet, and stuck to his head, as if he had been diving, sat up and gasped. Outrage. A fiendish outrage. Lingard put the chatty on the table, and looked at him in attentive silence. Elmayer passed his hand over his forehead, and went on in an unsteady tone. When I remember that, I lose all control, he said. I told you he anchored Abdullah's ship abreast our jetty, but over to the other shore, near the Raja's place. The ship was surrounded with boats. From here it looked as if he had been landed on the raft. Every dugout in Sambar was there. Through my glass I could distinguish the faces of people on the poop, Abdullah, Willems, Lakamba, everybody. That old cringing scoundrel Sahaman was there. I could see quite plain. There seemed to be much talk and discussion. Finally I saw a ship's boat lowered. Some Arab got into her, and the boat went towards Padalolo's landing place. It seems they had been refused admittance, so they say. I think myself, that the water gate was not unbarred quick enough, to please the exalted messenger. At any rate I saw the boat come back almost directly. I was looking on, rather interested, when I saw Willems and some more go forward very busy about something there. That woman was also amongst them. Ah, that woman. Dot Almayer choked, and seemed on the point of having a relapse, but by a violent effort regained a comparative composure. All of a sudden, he continued, "Ang. They fired a shot into Padalolo's gate, and before I had time to catch my breath I was startled. You may believe they sent another, and burst the gate open. Whereupon, I suppose, they thought they had done enough for a while, and probably felt hungry, for a feast began aft. Abdullah sat amongst them like an idol, cross-legged, his hands on his lap. He's too great altogether to eat when others do, but he presided, you see. Willems kept on dodging about forward, aloof from the crowd, and looking at my house through the ship's long glass. I could not resist it. I shook my fist at him. Just so, said Lingard, gravely. That was the thing to do, of course. If you can't fight a man the best thing is to exasperate him. Almayer waved his hand in a superior manner, and continued, unmoved. Who may say what you like? You can't realize my feelings. He saw me, and, with his eye still at the small end of the glass, lifted his arm, as if answering a hail. I thought my turn, to be shot at, would come next after Padalolo, so I ran up the Union Jack to the flagstaff in the yard. I had no other protection. There were only three men besides Ally that stuck to me, three cripples, for that matter, too sick to get away. I would have fought single-handed, I think, I was that angry, but there was the child. What to do with her? Couldn't send her up the river with the mother. You know I can't trust my wife. I decided to keep very quiet, but to let nobody land on our shore. Private property, that, under a deed from Padalolo. I was within my right, wasn't I? The morning was very quiet. After they had a feed on board the bark with Abdullah, most of them went home. Only the big people remained. Towards 3 o'clock Sahaman crossed alone in a small canoe. I went down on our wharf with my gun to speak to him, but didn't let him land. The old hypocrite said Abdullah sent greetings, and wished to talk with me on business. Would I come on board? I said no, I would not. Told him that Abdullah may write, and I would answer, but no interview, neither on board his ship nor on shore. I also said that, if anybody attempted to land within my fences I would shoot no matter whom. On that he lifted his hands to heaven, scandalized, and then paddled away pretty smartly to report, I suppose. An hour or so afterwards I saw Willems land a boat party at the Raja's. It was very quiet. Not a shot was fired, and there was hardly any shouting. They tumbled those brass guns you presented to Padalolo last year down the bank into the river. It's deep there close to. The channel runs that way, you know. About 5, Willems went back on board, and I saw him join Abdullah by the wheel aft. He talked a lot, swinging his arms about, seemed to explain things, pointed at my house, then down the reach. Finally, just before sunset, they hove upon the cable, and dredged the ship down nearly half a mile to the junction of the two branches of the river where she is now, as you might have seen. Lingard nodded. That evening, after dark I was informed Abdullah landed for the first time in Sambar. He was entertained in Sahaman's house. I sent Ally to the settlement for news. He returned about 9, and reported that Padalolo was sitting on Abdullah's left hand before Sahaman's fire. There was a great council. Ali seemed to think that Padalolo was a prisoner, but he was wrong there. They did the trick very neatly. Before midnight everything was arranged as I can make out. Padalolo went back to his demolished stockade, escorted by a dozen boats with torches. It appears he begged Abdullah to let him have a passage in the Lord of the Isles to Penang. From there he would go to Mecca. The firing business was alluded to as a mistake. No doubt it was in a sense. Padalolo never meant resisting. So he is going, as soon as the ship is ready for sea. He went on board next day with 3 women, and half a dozen fellows as old as himself. By Abdullah's orders he was received with a salute of 7 guns, and he has been living on board ever since 5 weeks. I doubt whether he will leave the river alive. At any rate he won't live to reach Penang. Lakamba took over all his goods, and gave him a draft on Abdullah's house payable in Penang. He is bound to die before he gets there. Don't you see? He sat silent for a while in dejected meditation, then went on. Of course there were several rows during the night. Various fellows took the opportunity of the unsettled state of affairs to pay off old scores and settle old grudges. I passed the night in that chair there, dozing uneasily. Now and then there would be a great tumult and yelling which would make me sit up, revolver in hand. However, nobody was killed. A few broken heads, that's all. Early in the morning Willems caused them to make a fresh move which I must say surprised me not a little. As soon as there was daylight they busied themselves in setting up a flagpole on the space at the other end of the settlement, where Abdullah's having his houses built now. Shortly after sunrise there was a great gathering at the flagpole. All went there. Willems was standing leaning against the mast, one arm over that woman's shoulders. They had brought an armchair for Padalolo, and Lakamba stood on the right hand of the old man, who made a speech. Everybody in Sambor was there. Women, slaves, children, everybody. Then Padalolo spoke. He said that by the mercy of the Most High he was going on a pilgrimage. The dearest wish of his heart was to be accomplished. Then, turning to Lakamba, he begged him to rule justly during his Padalolo's absence. There was a bit of play-acting there. Lakamba said he was unworthy of the honorable burden, and Padalolo insisted. Poor old fool! It must have been bitter to him. They made him actually entreat that scoundrel. Fancy a man compelled to beg of a robber to despoil him. But the old Raja was so frightened. Anyway, he did it, and Lakamba accepted at last. Then Willems made a speech to the crowd. Said that on his way to the west the Raja he meant Padalolo would see the great white ruler in Batavia, and obtain his protection for Sambor. Meantime, he went on, I, an Orang Blanda and dear friend, hoist the flag under the shadow of which there is safety. With that he ran up a Dutch Gutenberg edition. End of chapter.